Well, Acts 18, verse 18. Paul had shorn his head in Cenchrea, for he had made a vow. Well, I want to suggest that this vow was a Nazirite vow. Now, the vow of the Nazirite was when an ordinary person could devote themselves to God for a particular period, often for a particular purpose. And I think that that's what he did. It was a voluntary vow, wasn't required, but he did it. And the way they did Nazirite vows in those days was that typically they should be ended with a sacrifice at Jerusalem. And that is what he's doing. He's going up to Jerusalem. Well, there's a lot of other hints of this. He talks about his work, as his gospel work, as having been separated unto the work of the gospel. Romans 1 verse 1, Galatians 1, Acts 13. He talks about this as if he has been separated unto, and that is very much the idea of the Nazirite vow, to be separated unto a specific work for God. And he says in Philippians 3:12, I am not yet perfected or consecrated. I have not yet fulfilled my Nazirite vow. Or as he says elsewhere, I've not yet finished my course. But at the end of his life in 2 Timothy 4, he can say, I've finished it. As if he felt that he had a specific commission that he had got to fulfill. And when he says in Romans 14:21 that he will not drink wine lest he offend others, he's actually quoting the very words from the Septuagint in Numbers 6:3 about the Nazirite who was not to drink wine. So he keeps having this idea in mind. The Nazirite, in Numbers 6 verse 6, was separated unto the Lord, or joined unto the Lord. And he uses that language in Romans 14 about himself. Well, what are we to make of this? He was called to be a preacher to the Gentiles. He was given this commission. And I think that that doesn't mean that he had to do it, but he willingly, of his own volition, devoted himself to it. And as a Jew, he felt that he could do that in terms of this Nazirite vow. Well, he says in Acts 20, verse 24, about the ministry that I received from the Lord Jesus to testify to the gospel of the grace of God. The ministry that I received, and he uses that Greek word lambano, which isn't really the most comfortable word choice, I would say. If Paul intends us to understand that he'd just been given a ministry by Jesus and he'd received it. Lambano really has the idea of taking or even grasping. The ministry that I took or received or grasped from Jesus to testify to the gospel of the grace of God. It's as if he was offered that ministry and he took it. Otherwise, God would have been, as it were, or Jesus would, as it were, have been using Paul as a mere puppet. Hey, you, I'm going to make you do a service for me, a ministry. Right, and you're going to go and preach to the Gentiles, off you go, you shall do it whether you wish to or not, because I decided to pull the strings and you shall do it. Well, man is not a puppet, and we are not on a chain or on a leash, as it were, to God. He wants, of course, our free will service. And this is why Jesus said, I have not called you servants, I have called you friends. We work in cooperation with him as his friends and not as his sort of robot-like slaves. And so the ministry that I received, that I took, that I even grasped eagerly from the Lord Jesus to testify to the gospel of the grace of God. So here you see, I think, the interplay of ideas. On one hand, we are led by the Lord's Spirit to a position where we're given, offered a ministry. And yet on the other sort of pole, we have to take that. We have to receive that from him. We have to grasp it. We have to take it willingly. That's why he says in Romans 12, verse 7, that give yourselves to your ministry, as if he is sure that everybody has got a ministry. And that's why In his final maturity, when he's writing from prison in Rome, he encourages others to focus on their ministry. So Timothy 4:5, he says to Timothy, take heed to your ministry, says the same to the Colossians in Colossians 4:17. Well, in his time of dying, right at the very end, he can say, I finished my course, to Timothy 4, verse 7. Just actually as John the Baptist spoke of finishing his course. The phrase is only elsewhere used about in Acts 13:25, about John finishing his course. And at the end of his life, Paul says that he felt that he had finished his course, that is, as John the Baptist had. And he'd probably heard John the Baptist preaching when he was a young guy. That's in passing. The question is then, what is my ministry? What is my calling? And here you do have to ask the Lord Jesus to reveal that to you. Because your calling is not the same as what you might consider to be your talents. And to quote my dear wife, something she said to me many years ago now, which I always remember, it's not what we want to do. It is not about, I would like to do this, so therefore that is my ministry. No, it's about what people need and what, if you wish, the Lord needs, what Jesus needs, not what you need for your ego or for what you envisage yourself doing. There's a lot of people who I think make that mistake, probably all of us. They get an idea in their head. They imagine themselves as, I don't know, some do-gooder in a particular situation, and they're frustrated because they can't quite get to that, as it were. But that may not be your ministry. That's simply your ego. That's what you want to do. And it is simply not so that we are asked to do that which we are good at or that which we think we would excel at. Because Jesus and God don't, in that sense, need our work. They don't need our ministry in one sense. It is all for our development to some degree. And that's why you see biblical examples of people given ministries which might appear to not be at all what they were cut out for. So that they did their work with a sense of humility and with a sense of inadequacy. You think of Moses. He was always on about his inadequacy. Who am I? I've got a stutter. I can't speak Egyptian well anymore. I've been 40 years out of it just looking after sheep in the desert. I mean, I'm a rough guy now. I'm not like I used to be. Send Aaron, can you? And no, he's the man. It is your inadequacy which is your adequacy. It's like Mary Magdalene, the first witness of the risen Lord Jesus. Well, she was a woman, and female testimony had no legal value, not in Hebrew, not in Roman law. And she was a woman out of whom had been driven seven demons, which we understand to be serious mental illness. So that's why when she first witnesses that, yeah, I've seen the Lord, they say, you're having one of your bad turns, Mary. You're crazy. That's basically what they said to her. That's how they received what she said. And of course, she had been a prostitute. Let's be clear about it. And people would think, a hooker, right? And you saw Jesus. You were down the graveyard and you saw Jesus. She would have not had the best reputation. And yet, she was the one chosen to be the lead prime witness. As I say, Moses is another example. And when you think of Paul himself, he was chosen to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And Peter was sent to the Jews. Well, Peter was an illiterate fisherman. And when he stood up and preached to the Jerusalem intelligentsia, they noticed that he is an unlearned and ignorant man, agrammatos. He is not educated. Clearly, this guy has not been to school. Agrammatos, without grammar, literally. He can't even speak properly. He messes up. He talks in such working-class sort of way, doesn't get the endings on his cases right, and so on. But he was the guy that was used to baptize 3,000 people in one day, when he was the least qualified in many ways. And he did it, of course, just literally a stone's throw from where he had denied Jesus, and everybody knew what had happened. The girl who saw him running down the street, all that. And he was in tears and all the rest of it. Yeah, everybody knew about it, but the least qualified was used for that. You'd have thought, look, wouldn't it be better to use a former rabbi like Paul, who had been trained at the feet of Gamaliel? Would it not be better to use him with his razor-sharp mind to engage with the Jews? Why not send Peter from half Gentile Galilee, why not send him to the Gentiles? Wouldn't he, like, get on better with them? But God did it the other way round. And so don't assume that your ministry is what you fancy yourself doing or what you fancy yourself to be good at or talented at. This is a major mistake. This is an absolutely major mistake that I suppose we all make because it is so easy to make. Because it's not about me. It's not about you. It's not about what we have in our little heads, our little dream. No, it's all about him and his work.